from the Mutual Broadcasting System. This is STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. Now, retired Marine Intelligence Officer and globally recognized risk expert, Hal Kempfer.
Welcome to STRAT. In our Strategic Risk Assessment Talk, this episode is going to talk about this kind of, dare I say, complicated business between Hezbollah and Lebanon, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps and its Al-Quds Force, the governor of Lebanon, Israel, and the U.S., because all of this has been playing out in the news. And for many, this is kind of, it's a little confused, which is, wait a minute, why does Iran insist on a ceasefire in Lebanon with Hezbollah? And some of this has to do with the fact that Hezbollah is, unlike Iran, is not a nation state. They're a non-governmental entity out there. They're a non-state actor. And some of this behind the scenes is Iran trying to elevate their status, which is amazing when you consider everything that's been going on, but that's more of it. So anyway, little background here. Hezbollah is a very large Shiite extremist group established in Lebanon by Iran and its Revolutionary Guard Corps starting in the early 80s. Now, it wasn't like Presto Magico, they stood up overnight, but they stood up pretty darn fast. Among other things, among other horrific things that they're responsible for, in 1983, they bombed the U.S. Embassy, and then, of course, they bombed the U.S. Marine Corps barracks and Marine barracks at Beirut International Airport, killing 241 Marines and sailors. And that was the first time I personally knew someone who had been killed by terrorists. So that's that kind of stands out in my memory pretty large. Now, during the early 80s and really early 80s from the event, Israel occupied a big chunk of Lebanon, going all the way up into parts of Beirut, and they continue occupying them until literally up till about the year 2000, when they pulled back. Now, Hezbollah was specifically set up by Iran in the early 80s, while Israel is in there, to basically attack Israel. They would call themselves the protectors of the Shiite Muslims, the Shiite Lebanese Muslims. But the reality is they were a proxy force set up by Iran aimed specifically at Israel. However, their co-equal goal, and this is in the fervor of the post-79 Shiite Islamic Revolution in Iran with Ayatollah Khomeini, who was in charge, was that they wanted to establish a Shiite Muslim regime, a revolutionary regime in Beirut and in Lebanon that looked pretty much identical to what they had in Iran. And so Hezbollah was their way of doing that. And they started out very much a paramilitary militia terrorist force operating there in the 80s, and then they just grew and grew. But that was their goal. That's what they wanted to establish, was they wanted to make it a Shiite Islamic revolutionary regime controlled country. There is a difference, though. Unlike Iran, Shiite Muslims are not the majority of the population of Lebanon. They are a very, very large minority of that population, but they are not, I think they're the largest minority of the different faith groups here, but they are not a majority. So the demographics just didn't support something like this happening. And it never has happened. However, as a political party, they have always been very powerful, even amongst Shiite Muslims. They only represent about half the Shiite Muslims, but because they're such a dominant force within the Shiite Muslim community, they overshadow everything else. So they kind of represent Shiite Muslims de facto, if you will, in Lebanon. And they also have a very powerful presence in the legislative body of Lebanon. And they do have members of the Lebanese parliament that are Hezbollah. So they have been part of the government for quite some time. And this has shifted back and forth over time. So they're not just some extremist terrorist group sitting on the side. they are very much ensconced into the body politic of the Lebanese government as well. So they hold both of these goals, if you will, to create. They've never dropped, really, it's almost an unstated goal in many ways, but they never dropped the desire to, you know, basically take over Lebanon and become the de facto government there or the de jure government there. And they've never given up that goal of destroying Israel. And they started right after the October 7th attacks by Hamas, those just unbelievably bloody, horrific attacks on Israel. It was in short order that Hezbollah started firing missiles into Israel, just like Hamas was firing missiles into Israel about that same time. So they jumped in on that right away, and they linked themselves to what's happening in Gaza with Hamas and everything that happened on October 7th. Now, this year, something rather transformative has taken place. Israel and the government of Lebanon, not Hezbollah. And I know you're sitting there thinking, yeah, but Hezbollah has members of the parliament. They do. But the actual government of Lebanon have kind of come to terms. They both agree that Hezbollah has to go. Now, for the government of Lebanon, their goal is to disarm and demilitarize Hezbollah. They are not espousing that politically, as a political party per se, that Hezbollah has to be destroyed. But what they are saying is, as a military organization, paramilitary organization, armed organization, they need to hand over their arms. Well, obviously, Hezbollah is not interested in that at all. And for Hezbollah to hand over its arms, particularly its ballistic missile stockpiles and drones, I think they would see that as a existential event. And keep in mind, this is a organization that previously had that pager attack where they had been convinced that the leadership, the management level of Hezbollah all needed to carry pagers. And that was a rather brilliant Israeli plot to, basically cause severe damage to a number of Hezbollah leadership figures around the country when their pagers all blew up. And then that was quickly followed by the walkie-talkie attack, where they turned to basically handheld radios as an alternate means of communication. Then all those things blew up. So they have taken some real hits at the leadership level, and it's believed, or at least understood, that Iranian Al-Quds officers are literally calling the shot as far as military action involving Hezbollah right now. So they've lost so much in terms of their tactical leadership, their operational leadership, through those things and some incredibly well-planned, well-executed strikes on various leadership figures within Hezbollah, that they basically are reliant on Iran and Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps and their Al-Quds force to actually run stuff. So it's a rather interesting situation that they're in. Now, Israel and the government of Lebanon have agreed to extend their ceasefire. However, Hezbollah says, hey, look, we're not part of those discussions. We're not the government of Lebanon, and we are not going to go along with that. And the issue is not that Israel is firing on the government of Lebanon or the Lebanese armed forces. They're hitting targets that are Hezbollah. And so there is this kind of interesting thing, is like, you know, the big headlines, you know, hey, the ceasefire has been extended. But at the same time, Hezbollah, which is the primary reason that there is military action going on there, is not part of that agreement. They're off on the side. And so that's another way of saying that those attacks, that those operations, the fighting by Hezbollah isn't really going to do much. But what this has done is it's put the government of Lebanon pretty much on the same side with Israel regarding Hezbollah. And that is a big shift. That's a big change. Now, for reference, I don't know if this is entirely accurate because things have changed a lot, but Hezbollah has about 40 to 50,000 active combatants. They got about 30 to 50,000 reserve, you know, part-time militia that goes all well, along with a lot of missiles. I'll get more into this. Missiles, short-range, longer-range, short, medium-range missiles, and some unmanned aerial vehicles. I'll talk more about that in a bit. Hezbollah's arsenal includes about 25, and it's smaller it probably was, but it could be up to 25,000 rockets and missiles. It's not quite clear how much of that has been destroyed. has been subject to attrition by Israeli strikes, but let's just say they have a lot of missile and a lot of rockets. And again, these are primarily short-range certain things. It also possesses some advanced cruise missile capabilities. It has some air defense systems. It has some shore-to-sea missiles and, and about 1,000 of what they term suicide UAVs. In other words, attack kinetic drones. Its strategy emphasizes rocket-based offensive operations, what would some would term light infantry operations, and then and anti-armor stuff, basically using firing positions to take on Israeli armored assets. It also has integrated drones into a lot of different things it's doing. It's doing some very advanced things, to include using drones that are wire-guided. That's that fiber optic drone stuff. That's a thing that the Russians and the Ukrainians have been working on. The issue there is when you have a fiber optic drone, your electronic warfare capabilities of jamming that signal or trying to, take over the signal for the drone to work, because there is no signal to jam because it's hardwired in. So they've been using that, and that's causing Israel to adapt to those changing tactical environment, which is a real challenge for them. Now, despite sustained Israeli airstrikes and target operation, it does appear that Hezbollah has recovered a lot of the things that they had destroyed previously, and so they are very much in the fight with a significant amount of forces. About 1 million Lebanese have been displaced in the current fighting going on. I think since March 2nd, they estimate about 2,600 Lebanese people have been killed. A number of them are women and children, although that's always tough to estimate, because certainly from a Hezbollah standpoint, they will always, and Hamas is the same thing, if a young military age male is killed, they will put out something that says it was a woman or a child that was killed instead. So it's tough to get any real concrete numbers on that. And the Lebanese Health Service puts out some numbers that could be used, but even then you have to kind of look at it a little bit skeptically, just because of who was doing what and who was reporting what, where the information actually come from. Now, Iran has been trying to link Lebanon as part of any ceasefire within the Strait of Hormuz and with Iran, with U.S. and Israeli forces. Israel turned around immediately when this came up and said, no, Lebanon's a completely separate issue. The U.S. seemed to hedge for a bit, and then we turned around and said, no, Lebanon is a completely separate issue. Iran was supposed to open the Strait of Hormuz, did not do so, and then claimed, well, we can't do so as long as there's fighting and Israeli action in Lebanon. And from Iran's perspective, they see a ceasefire, but they kind of correspond to what Hezbollah says. When Israel pulled all of its forces out of Lebanon, then Hezbollah will stop fighting. Well, that scenario is not going to happen, any more than Hamas's demands that Israel pull all of its forces out of the Gaza Strip and then Hamas would stop fighting. Again, this is a current, pie-in-the-sky maximalist demands by these large terrorist groups, and in this case, that terrorist group being the Revolutionary Guard Corps of Iran included, and that scenario is just not going to happen, all right? However, President Trump has a lot of pressures. What's happening to the U.S. economy, gas prices right now here in the U.S., the global economy, a lot of reasons why he wants to get the Strait of Hormuz open right away. And what's happening in Lebanon is putting a lot of pressure on the negotiations with Iran. And so he reportedly had a very contentious conversation, used some very strong language with Prime Minister Netanyahu about what's happening. But then it sounds like Israel and Netanyahu did actually explain what's going on. And I think the White House has a better appreciation for what's being done and why it's happening. Now, the government of Lebanon, as I mentioned, has agreed to extend the ceasefire longer, but Hezbollah's rejected that premise outright. So I don't think this is going to go away anytime soon. Israeli Defense Forces have gone north the Litani River. That goes back to the 1701 UN Security Council resolution. That was supposed to be a delineating line that Hezbollah was supposed to stay north. They didn't. They infiltrated right back in. So they've gone north of that. They're reportedly up in the Bekaa Valley. They were supposed to go up to southern Lebanon or southern Beirut. I don't know if any of the lead forces actually made it up that far north. It's very possible they did. But there's some agreement that they're going to hold off for this one key area where the Hezbollah stronghold area of southern Beirut. It's to be seen as to what happens there. I'm not entirely sure. For those of you who are not immersed in this war from the 1980s, the Bekaa Valley has always been a Hezbollah stronghold. That's where they've always held a large number of the forces. Their cache of weapons and everything else back there. So that's pretty significant that Israel's gone that far north. It used to be that the presence of the Syrian army right on the other side in Syria under the Assad government was always kind of a limiting feature. And Syrian army at times had done incursions into Lebanon. That Syrian army no longer exists. It's gone. The Assad government's gone. And the current government in Syria has no love lost for Hezbollah. So that whole flank, if you will, that whole side that they used to be the sort of shield, if you will, behind Hezbollah no longer exists. So that changes the situation dramatically. And in all fairness, Israel is exploiting that changed situation right now with what they're doing. Now, the problem with UN Security Council 1701 was it was put in the latter O's in about 2007. It was put in. And the problem with that is that it establishes a peacekeeper, UN peacekeepers. It establishes the Lebanese army as peacekeepers in southern Lebanon. But the reality was, and this is what the Israelis uncovered, was that they simply weren't stopping Hezbollah from infiltrating south of the Litani River and setting up shop literally right on the border with Israel. So the peacekeeping mission, regardless of all the flowery language, despite everything the UN has said, it just wasn't working. It didn't stop Hezbollah from using southern Lebanon as a base to attack with rockets and everything else into northern Israel. And they were making villages, towns, any places where people were habitating in northern Israel, uninhabitable because of the constant rocket fire and everything else going on. And there's some horrific examples of what occurred from that. So long story short, despite the issues with Iran, the U.S. is going to have trouble trying to figure out a way to get Israel to stop what it's doing in Lebanon. And despite the U.S. insistence that, you know, the Strait of Hormuz gets open and they can reach some sort of agreement, and the hopeful talk that we're almost there, and I heard some talk as literally just before I started recording this, that we were talking about, we're almost there, days away from maybe some sort of agreement, and I'm certainly not holding my breath. I don't see Lebanon really being something that we can, you know, we're not going to get Israel to withdraw its forces. That's just simply not going to happen, and Israel can't withdraw its forces. And frankly, if Iran cannot support Hezbollah in Lebanon, if they actually have to cut them loose and say, you're on your own in a very significant way, I'm not sure Hezbollah can survive for very long either. I think that complete loss of support from Iran would be just absolutely devastating for Hezbollah. And certainly the government of Lebanon and Israel are dead set on disarming and demilitarizing Hezbollah. And without weapons, missile, drones, everything, it's not clear if Hezbollah really has a raison d'etre. They have a, you know, reason for being, a reason to exist, if you will, beyond being this terrorist paramilitary or military force. So it's a real problem for them. So what does this mean? Well, I think you're going to see some more fighting. And Hezbollah, I don't think, can give up fighting. They just, at this juncture, they're going to keep doing things. Even if there's a ceasefire, they're going to keep doing things that will violate the ceasefire, and Israel will be compelled to respond to those things. And so I'm just not seeing the fighting disappear. In fact, for Hezbollah, and some would say even for Iran and the Revolutionary Guard Corps, probably the biggest danger for them is if the fighting stops. If they can't point to this revolutionary warfare, this fighting, as something that they're all about, then they're going to have to focus on the other thing, which is, how are you doing with keeping the water going, the sewers going, how's business going, how's the economy going, How are all these basic services for the populations you represent? How is that working out? And in that regard, you have a couple of relatively incompetent governments that are not very good at that sort of stuff. That's the same problem Hamas had in the Gaza Strip. They couldn't really focus from anything other than jihad, if you will, warfare, because if they did, they were going to be focused on things that they really were not very good at, which was water, sewage, education, all these things that go into running a society. So they have a real problem. So hence, I would say from this, watch Lebanon. See what's going on. It's going to be very telling on many, many levels as to what's happening across the Middle East. But if Hezbollah is neutralized in this, if Hezbollah ceases to be what we know them as today, that will dramatically shift the map of the Middle East. That will have repercussions all across the region. And so it is something we have to watch carefully. Hey, thanks for listening to Strat. Also, visit stratpodcast.com. You can also go to my YouTube channel, Hal Kemper TV, or go to my website, www.gripsa.com. And you can also go to the Los Angeles InfraGuard website at www.infraguardlosangeles.org. I have a global threat update webinar coming up on June 16th, and my gray zone threats webinar is in Encore running right now. So opportunity there to, if you haven't had enough of me listening to me now, you can listen to me more with those. So anyway, thanks again, and hope you tune in next time.